You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. MBTA General Manager Phil Eng made very big news this morning.
By the end of 2024, we will eliminate all the speed restrictions that currently exist. Any that arise, we will tackle them as part of them.
And then he laid out a plan. Joining us now to break it down, Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board, and Stacey Thompson, Executive Director of the advocacy group Livable Streets. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Stacey.
Good to be back.
So this is news, Stacey, and you were there this morning. The gist, what did Phil Eng announce?
Yes, this is huge news, and I think it's important because it's what folks who ride the system and advocates like me have been asking for a long time, which is a plan. And it's a 14-month plan to get rid of 100% of the current speed restrictions. What this means is that they're going to spend about 188 days total over the next year repairing different parts of track on every single line of the system. They also gave general time frames. So someone who is an everyday rider could go to the website now and say, oh, I know that, you know, roughly in the spring, I might be impacted by this, which is a huge deal. There are also going to be 5 open houses so that if people have questions, want to provide feedback, there is flexibility built into this plan. We basically haven't seen anything like this from the T in decades.
So, Brian, producer Rob Lane, who does our T segment, said, you know, in his mind, this was to good news like an Orange Line car being on fire is to bad news. Do you agree?
I agree. It wouldn't be the analogy that I would use, but yes, I agree. We don't like to discuss fire and the tea in the same sentence, but no, this is huge. We haven't seen anything like this, as Stacey said, in decades. We've also had shutdowns before with no discernible results. We have seen recently, however, with the Ashmont shutdown and the Mattapan shutdown and smaller ones on the Green Line, that when the Eng leadership does this, results occur. And so that's why I am excited, and I think that this plan actually will bring real results and people will have a better experience on the system by the end of 2024.
All right. So I want to stay kind of parked in this zone for a little while, and I'm going to do something here. You know, you just said in the past, maybe we've seen shutdowns. We haven't gotten great results. Sometimes one or the other of you will be sitting here with Chris Dempsey, who's a former assistant secretary of transportation for the state. When the MBTA announced the kind of shutdown that we're talking about seeing over the next several months to eliminate slow zones for the Ashmont branch, back in August on our show, Chris said this.
We did not see the benefits of that on the Orange Line. I think there's a little bit of a gimmickry there.
But then the Ashmont branch shutdown happened, Stacey, and we did see results.
It went really well. And I think that's the result of a few different things. One, the MBTA gave us a little more heads up so that folks in the community were able to make alternative plans. The city of Boston really supported that. So the impact was not as deeply felt, right? People got through it more easily. Secondarily, there's new leadership, literally new people directing the ships, making sure the work was going well. And then third, they've built their workforce and purchased new equipment. So again, these are really basic, you know, back to basic strategies. But all of those simple steps together mean that as it happened on time, there were no major hiccups. And when riders got back on the red line, there was no settling time. The train was just faster. And
a lot faster.
So. Yes. You know, people who work for the T, people who ride the T walked in and were like, whoa, the stations are cleaner. The T works. You know, it was a shock to them in a good way.
So we're here with Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board, and Stacey Thompson of Livable Streets. And we're talking about news this morning. MBTA General Manager Phil Eng announcing huge announcement, right? Which is, we're going to stop all the slow zones by the end of 2024. Here's the thing, Brian. We're all like, whoa, this is big news. I could imagine somebody who's listening saying, wait a minute, why are we making such a big fuss about a plan, right? How is it possible that a plan is big news? How is it possible, Brian Kane, that a plan is big news?
because for the first time in a very long time, there is a belief amongst people that pay very close attention that this plan will result in real discernible changes. And I've said this before publicly that the adults are now in charge, so it seems at the T. And when they say something, they mean it, and it happens. And we've seen that in the last 6 months that Phil Lang and his leadership team have been here. And I think that gives us every reason to believe it will happen again. Now, a plan isn't good enough, of course. And even doing this in and of itself is not good enough. I mean, if we look at what happened on the Red Line, which was great, and I'm very supportive of it, it brought us back to 2018 levels of service in terms of speed and reliability. 2018 is not good enough for the 2023 Boston region that we have. We need to get better. We need to get better quickly. But this will, at the very least, stop us getting any worse. And that is something to celebrate. Now, we can discuss whether that's very sad or not, that this is something to celebrate. But the fact is, Phil Lang has brought in people from national experts who know what they're doing. They are mentoring folks at the T. As Stacey said, they're starting to develop their own workforce internally who can do this kind of work and repeat it and be successful at it repeatedly. This is worth celebrating because we are starting to see those results, and it's what we've needed for a long time.
You know, there were, after the Ashmont shutdown reopened and we were seeing improved times, you know, so we'll go to X, formerly known as Twitter. You'll see somebody like Pat, who has the actual handle, quote, rides the T a lot, right? End quote. When you pick that as your handle, right, it does mean you're paying attention. Posted a photoshopped picture of Phil Ng with, wait for this, lasers coming out of his eyes, and captioned it, quote, they really let bro cook. End quote. You know, when we see, this is not what we're used to in terms of how people are responding to the MBTA, to a general manager of the MBTA. So now when you get somebody coming out and making a plan, there is this sense that this is a plan one might actually execute on. So, okay, I said I was going to sort of park in the zone of, wait, and I understand I'm mixing my metaphors, right? Park in the zone. Hopefully you aren't using a car if you're riding the T. But in this zone of why is a plan even a big deal? Now, I want to start talking about the plan. And again, we're here with Stacey Thompson, Brian Kane. This morning, the MBTA announces a 15 month plan to eliminate all slow zones on the MBTA. And I want to note, and I keyed in on this, Stacey Thompson, what Phil Lang said was, we're going to eliminate all existing slow zones. And if any emerge while we're doing it, we'll get after those too. Yeah. That was interesting, Stacey.
Yeah, I think you cannot underestimate the levels of disinvestment in the system. And when we're talking about not just a year or two, but in this case, we may have a couple of decades of problems that are hidden. And it's just not unusual to start to do this work and then find another problem. And I think that at least in my time sitting down with the general manager and with some folks on the team, they've really thought through as many potential scenarios as possible. So to me, this is not a plan on paper. This is an action plan that they're thinking about. They're thinking about what kind of consultants do they need to bring in? What kind of flexibility do they need to bring in? I would equate this to buying an old house where that, you know, needs some repairs, but you dig up the floor and then you find out, oh, there's been water damage. Oh, we have termites, right? That's kind of where the T is right now. So they're thinking about things like, potential additional
problems. I'm totally
problems.
Cracking up because I'm totally picturing Phil Lang coming in and saying, I don't love it. Can I list it?
Yep. I mean, he purchased an old house and he's pulling up the lead paint. He's pulling up the old floors. He's finding all of the damage. But I think, you know, even on top of that, they've thought about things. They've built this plan around weather, for example. Mm-hmm. So they're doing work that happens underground during the winter months so that they can make sure that that work gets done and they're going to have less of an impact. They've thought about the kinds of shuttles they'll need so that people with disabilities are able to move through these challenging diversions a little more easily. So I think they may find more stuff, but they've been thinking thinking through it.
Okay, so clearly you, Stacey Thompson, are feeling pretty positive on this. I'm going to introduce a touch of grumpiness. It's part of what we do, right? It's called the pushback. So when we get, I've got the handy dandy slide deck here, Brian Kane, that came with the press conference this morning. As I understand it, the track improvement program for 2023 is pretty baked in terms of dates and timeframes, et cetera. The 2024 is a draft.
Yes.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, it comes down to credibility again, and do you trust Phil Eng and his team to be able to keep to the schedule that they've put out there? And at this point, I do. Now, as Stacey said, they will encounter things in those 130-year-old tunnels that are not foreseen, and that will cause delays. This thing will not go exactly according to plan. No plan ever does when it comes to the T. So yes, the schedule that we see for 2024 probably will not meet its week by week, day by day schedule. But at large, as a framework, it should basically work out so that by the end of 2024, we have no new slow zones and any ones that pop up will be eliminated. And that is still, to me, worth celebrating.
Okay. And so for the listeners who are like, for the love of God, people, just tell us when mine is up, right? Let me just quickly, in the 2023 plan, we've got Alewife to Kendall on the red, Oak Grove to North Station on the orange, JFK UMass to Park Street and on red. We've got North Station to Kenmore Heath and Babcock on the green, Riverside to Kenmore on the green. I as a non-T person, Stacey, don't know. Okay, great choices, bad choices. What's missing? Did somebody throw darts? You know, what to make of what's happening first in the rest of 2023?
Yep. So I think for those of us who are transit wonks who look at this plan, it makes a lot of sense because it has two layers. Like I said, one, they're considering things like weather. So, you know, we see the work that's happening in the Green Line Tunnel happening in the winter because they know they can do it even when a blizzard is happening. And then you see there's sort of a gap on the Green Line, for example, when graduation will be happening and all the universities that the Green Line serves. So they've thought about major events, major community happenings around the system, and that is integrated into this plan. What I would say is positive about it being a draft plan is that they are still seeking input so that if they missed something, they've spent months working on this, but they are talking to municipalities, talking to the members of the public, and they might say, whoa, we missed something. We will push that back.
Like
a
fluff festival in Somerville
exactly.
That got missed.
Exactly. So I don't see that as a bad thing. To your earlier point about what does this mean? What's going on? I do think the T still has a lot of work to do to help communicate what this means to the public.
Brian's nodding. The listener's nodding.
And yeah. This is, you know, a consistent area of feedback. I think that they're still learning how to do this, but it's hard to, you know, we're all sitting in this space looking at pieces of paper with little colored dots showing us, I know how to read this. An everyday person doesn't.
Yeah, this is a Gantt chart, folks.
Yeah.
They're not fun.
And so I do think the T has a lot more work to do, not just for people who are going to be directly impacted, but all of us end up taking different parts of this system all year round. So I may be thinking about the one Orange Line shutdown that's going to impact me later in the summer, but I'm going to be impacted by these other pieces as I'm moving around through the city as well. So I think they have a lot of work to do to help people understand this, and they have a lot of work to do to communicate about the mitigation strategy. What are the alternatives? How are people going to move around? And we really want to see them roll out the red carpet on this one. We want people to feel comfortable. We want them to be able to get where they need to go while these diversions are happening.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We are with Stacey Thompson of Livable Streets, Brian Kane of the MBT Advisory Board, talking about an announcement this morning from General Manager Phil Eng of the MBTA with a plan, not just an intention, but a plan to end all slow zones, current and potentially future, by the end of 2024. I want to pick it up here. We were just acknowledging some details, real details, about which pieces and specific timelines through the end of 2023 and then a draft plan in 2024. Brian Kane, with your level of experience, is there any gnarliness in here that makes you think, wow, I just don't know that that's doable?
So So when I look at this plan, what I can see is that it's dependent on a host of things like Stacey mentioned, but it's also very dependent on existing infrastructure. There's things and different sections of track are powered by different segments of power. And so you can only eliminate power to certain sections of track at one time so that you can run service on the rest of it. So what I'm seeing here really comes down to power sections. And this is, you know, obviously makes a lot of sense. What I would like to see eventually is even more different power sections within the T. And now this is really inside baseball, so that they can shut down even smaller sections and fix those smaller sections in the future, because this work is going to have to continue to go on. What we don't want to have is let's do a big blitz in 2024 and then not touch the tracks again until 2054. This is what has gotten us into this issue, is decades of disinvestment. So what I hope they're going to do when they go out and do this work, and I haven't been able to confirm this yet, is not only bring it back to its 2018 levels, but really future-proof it so that it can be better for the next 10, 20, 30 years.
So for those who might have just joined us, Brian, you pointed out that these fixes will get us to 2018 levels. There have been other times when it's been better than that. Stacey, is that ever coming?
I think it is. But this is really just the first step, right? We have to fix the basic infrastructure of the T before the, not before really, but while they are thinking about the next step to build, frankly, simply a resilient system. On top of increasing service, we need to continue to think about the impacts of climate change, continue to think about the impacts of how our region and our economy and our population is evolving and their dependence on the system. And that work also is happening now. And what I mean by that is they're using all of the financial resources the legislature gave them in order to do these repairs. They're going to spend that money down. By this time next year, we're going to be talking about something we all refer to as the fiscal cliff, yes, meaning that they don't have enough money in a year's time to run the system. And so if they're not thinking now about working with the legislature to make sure they have funding, then what can happen again is laying off workers who do this important work, cutting service, right? And so we're really hoping that this is demonstrating that they can do a good job building confidence in the legislature so that that legislative body is willing to give them the resources they need to bring us up to 2025 levels of service, which are hopefully, you know, the trains coming every 5 minutes. They have enough operators and dispatchers to make that system run. More evening service, more late night service, better integration with bus service, which is hopefully also dramatically improved. So we know that they're thinking about that integration, but we haven't seen that vision come from them quite yet.
So Brian Kane, it's funny, I'm chuckling to myself. It's been a while since the phrase fiscal cliff has come out of my mouth. So let's remind listeners, basically what we're talking about is a moment where, because of drops in ridership and a falling off of one-time funding that came from things like special pandemic sources, et cetera, the T will be experiencing deficits that it is hard to understand how to catch up with right now.
$230 to $260 million per year is not something that can be solved internally by the T itself. And what the T has been able to do sort of every year since the pandemic is kind of save enough money by not hiring people so that it has a budgetary surplus that it can then deploy the next year. But what we've been seeing is that the T has really been staffing up to the point now where they're approaching 7,000 employees just for
context.
Because
they had to. That was like the big push, right?
Oh, when I left, there was 5,500 of us, and that was just not enough to run this system. They're approaching 7,000. That all has to get paid for year over year. And unless something happens in the legislature, like Stacey said, we're not going to be in a position to be able to afford to pay 7,000 people to run the T, which I believe is pretty clear is the number that we need. And, you know, I've said this before, austerity has been tried many, many times. It doesn't work for the MBTA. Let's try something else besides austerity and just see if that works.
So, Stacey, then let me make sure I understand this. I think what I'm hearing you say is two things are going on here. One, while the money's there, fix it all.
Yep.
Fix it right and fix it fast. And then two, hope that that level of competence signals to Beacon Hill that it should put more money on the table than it's been doing.
Yes, exactly. So today, when the MBTA was making its announcement about this plan, Representative Strauss was there, and he co-chairs the Transportation Committee. And what he has very rightly called for on a number of occasions is he wants a number, he wants a plan, he wants proof. And I would look at this plan as them, you know, getting the receipts to bring to the legislature to say, look, we this is exactly how we spent your money. This is your return on investment. And now we can come to you with a real ask in dollars and cents about how we're going to spend even more money that we need. So I think that we're finally seeing the T respond to what the legislature has been calling for quite some time, which is tell us what you need, how much will it cost? But we haven't, again, quite seen a deeper vision, something that points to the future yet.
And we've talked about Representative Bill Strauss of the 10th Bristol here before. Okay, so as we wrap this up for today, Brian Kane, and we will keep talking here on the show, I do find myself wondering, now that this is out there, do you think we will hear more from Phil Eng as well? You know, will he now go on the communication blitz that you're looking for?
Will he keep cooking?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, I think so. I think we've seen Phil's style and what he does. He brings an engineer's perspective to this, but he also is a very good public communicator. And I do also want to give credit here to the secretary, Monica Tibbetts-Nutt, and the governor. They are letting Phil be Phil. And that is sometimes a very difficult thing to do in leadership. But they're letting this guy that they have hired at great expense, who they've recruited and brought in, do his thing. And so far, it's working. I think we'll be hearing a lot more from Phil. I think the public wants to hear more from Phil. I think they love seeing him out on the system. They love seeing his team out on the system. It's been a wonderful sea change at the authority and something that we need to continue to see.
And just a note, Acting Transportation Secretary Monica Tibbetts-Nutt will be on Radio Boston on Monday. So heads up on that. Brian Kane of the MBTA Advisory Board, Stacey Thompson of Livable Streets. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.